Online Gods, a podcast about digital cultures in India and beyond. This month we're speaking with Faye Ginsberg about the digital age and with Waseem Chand about Mangalore Menajan. In our more unthinking moments, then maybe there's an implicit assumption in our thoughts that the digital experience is the same for everyone. People in New York, Eastern Europe, Glossop or India might access and use the internet in the same way. We're all on similar apps, taking selfies, arguing about politics or sport, forwarding funny videos which stop being funny the moment we forward them, and so on and so on. But then maybe if we think about it a little bit more, maybe not very carefully, but a little bit more carefully, we might start to realise there is a lot of difference in the way we use the internet. But there may be prejudices seep into how we envisage people using the internet across the globe. The imagined social geography of places plays in our mind. I'm thinking, for example, when Bernie Sanders complains that some parts of America have internet almost as slow as Romania, as if Romanians shouldn't be accessing the internet in any way similar to that of Americans. Or when colleagues at work say, oh, you know, you're going to be in India next month, I guess you won't have such good internet access. And, you know, I let them believe that it's true, hoping that, you know, I get sent less emails about things I really don't want to do. I mean, the way that people in different parts of the world access the internet is, of course, extremely complicated. People have quite different possibilities for accessing the internet, and also they use it in a different way, often in a way that reflects the place where they're from. Whether this be rural Australia or a small city in India. And this is what we want to think through in this month's podcast. Escape a little bit of the large city bias which we've lived with since episode one and think through how some of the other parts of the world, this increasingly digital world, behave online, how digital media is remoulded and reconfigured in surprising and interesting ways in those places which are usually off the map of our discussions, how digital media is facilitating community conversations and enriching social lives. And this month, like every month, we do this in a couple of ways. First, by exploring a concept with a scholar, and second, by speaking to an online god, someone who is using the digital in an innovative or influential way. And this month, I think we've got a really wonderful and complimentary lineup. This month's scholar is Faye Ginsberg. She is the David B. Kreiser Professor of Anthropology, the Director for the Center for Media, Culture and History, the Co-Director for the Center for Religion and Media, and a Co-Director at the Council for the Study of Disability, all at New York University. Meanwhile, our online god is Waseem Chand, who is the admin for an Instagram account called Mangalore Menajan, Mangalore, my life, which is sort of a love letter to a city of Mangalore. Now, this podcast is part of a larger project on digital dignity, which is run out of LMU Munich by Sahana Udupa. So go to fordigitaldignity.com for more info. Very often when I introduce this podcast, I need to say something about how we're exploring how doing debate, discussion and politics and religion online is changing the public sphere in India. And I'm always tempted to say that we're exploring how the public sphere is changing in our digital age. But I can't. And I can't do this because I read an article by yourself about a year or so back when preparing for this project. And it stopped me being so easy and free with the term digital age. So maybe for the benefit of those people who haven't read the article, and also for myself, who feels terrible every time it sticks on my lips, I was wondering, can you help us? You know, are we living in a digital age?
So I'm glad that my article had an impact. So I think that article, or my critique of the digital age, is not so much a critique of the obvious fact that the digital has had a huge impact across most of the globe, but that it's had an impact in highly uneven, differentiated, stratified, indigenized, many, many, many different ways. And I know, like teaching in a place like New York City, you realize like students come into your classroom and they imagine every young person in the world is sitting in front of a laptop and maybe with a different language or some different cultural traditions, but really not imagining that there are these kinds of inequalities. There's an incredible illusion of a kind of leveling democracy that's occurred around the fact of the digital and the ways in which, you know, the internet works and Facebook and all these things. You know, I wrote that article, I'm going to say probably four or five years, maybe longer. So I think certain things are now more apparent now than they were then. But I think the fact of the profound inequality in access and in issues of language, and the fact that the digital is built on a, you know, hyper form of capitalist transformation, so that, you know, let's say you work out a really fantastic project with an Indigenous community in remote Australia having to do with their archives and other things, and tailor a program to it, and, you know, within another year, all the programs are obsolete. They have to invest heavily in new computers. They their programs may no longer run on those new computers. So the fact of capitalism on steroids is being a fact of the digital age, I think, is also another huge issue that also affects the kind of stratification and a difficulty of actually having it circle the globe in the imagined global village that Marshall McLuhan talked about, and that, you know, people like Nicholas Negroponte might talk about, or Bill Gates. I think, you know, there's a kind of papering over of what the political economy and issues of infrastructure and language and even just, you know, regular electricity, to talk about some very basic things, how differently those are still in place and affect each other. I actually saw something that was like circulating on, I'm going to say Facebook probably for a while, but quite widely, about a teacher in Ghana who has very, very few resources, shares a, you know, one room classroom with a blackboard and has to erase his lesson every day for the next teacher. And he was very concerned about his students not being computer literate because the resources were so limited. And every single day he would draw a picture of the interface that you get when you open up your laptop, you know, with all the, like, the everything that you look at and which kinds of things you might have to link to, just so that it would not be a complete mystery to his students if they were able to encounter a laptop. That is, you know, it's just like astonishing. Like, people don't, I think it went viral because people were suddenly sort of recognizing, mm-hmm. not just that there's a, you know, very uneven distribution of very simple kinds of digital tools like laptops across the board, but also that people's awareness of it would make them find such extraordinary ways to imagine, with very, very limited resources, to, you know, imagine providing for their school children, the citizens of the future, some way to not be completely behind the curve, which is, of course, always a concern, should they be fortunate enough to be able to have access to that kind of work. So that's just like one interesting example of that. So anyway, so that my concern in that article I wrote was also motivated by working a lot with different Indigenous communities and looking at the uptake of media in those communities and how different it is with digital interfaces from, let's say, the way, you know, I have like analog nostalgia for VHS and other things. They're much simpler forms. They're, uh-huh. in a sense, a more direct transfer. They're not mediated by the, you know, the ones and zeros of the digital and so forth. So there are certain ways in which that had a more, that, you know, as people indigenize these forms, you know, they had, it was kind of a different process of uptake. And, you know, there's tons of really amazing things going on, but I think it's a failure of the way we teach about media and the way the Western imagination works to not understand how differently people might take up these kinds of mediations without mm-hmm. thinking about cultural protocols, what's allowed to be seen and who has rights to tell certain stories, what has to be, you know, like why something going viral may be culturally very problematic for people. I mean, there's lots of reasons things going viral can be very mm-hmm. culturally problematic, but in terms of restricted knowledge for particular communities where initiation is, you know, part of a process of being exposed to certain forms of knowledge that are not available to other people, even just as one example. So anyway, so those are things that I try and address and think about. It's not that some of the world is exposed to the digital and other parts are not, but just this falls on very uneven ground. Very different resources are available. questions of how people indigenize and make things culturally appropriate is very invisible, and it's just such a lively, eye-opening thing to expose students to, or mm-hmm. colleagues to really realize how differently things can be taken up. And of course, we've seen increasingly, and here we are sitting in Hungary, the dark side of the digital age is, mm-hmm. you know, is very scary, and you know, seems to be turning the world in a very a difficult direction. So
yeah. I even just think about some of my own research, which is with auto rickshaw drivers in Mangalore in South India. And you know, when I first started doing research in 2011, I mean, people had mobile phones, mm-hmm. but you know, not smartphones, and certainly nobody had. People I was doing research with had computers at home, mm-hmm. like, or laptops. There was nothing of that. But now maybe 60-70% mm-hmm. of those people have smartphones mm-hmm. and engage in media circulation, mm-hmm. you know, through social groups, and then with me as well, you know, mm-hmm. which never happened before. So it's mm-hmm. like straight from, there was no step between computer and phone, just straight into mm-hmm. phone, and very visual as well, mm-hmm. or videos and sound, but mm-hmm. not necessarily written. So it's everything is, you know, like you say, it's very variated, from place to place, and also with the sort of different times as well. And I'm glad you mentioned this indigenous sort of use of media, because mm-hmm. that's one of the other things you look at in your work, mm-hmm. indigenous media. And I suppose, again, people could maybe be quite uncritically celebratory about, oh, great, now indigenous mm-hmm. groups have got media, mm-hmm. and now they can enter into some global conversation. Mm-hmm. I think the phrase you used before, global village, you know, mm-hmm. and so on. So maybe can you unpack that a little bit for us? You know, what's mm-hmm. what's going on? How can and how do indigenous groups, including the ones you've worked with, how do they engage in what we might want to call a global mm-hmm. village or not?
Yeah. So, of course, I'm really critical of that term, global village. And I want to absolutely make clear that I think there's a lot of really exciting work happening in lots of Indigenous communities in which the digital is becoming a very lively and important site of connectivity, and particularly, you know, across different Indigenous worlds, you know, let's say across Canada with First Nations folks, or with the Idle No More movement, for example, that emerged out of Saskatoon, Canada, regarding fighting back against extractive industries. And that's taken off, you know, in a very, very important way. So there's lots of work going out there, but I think we, you know, it's like, you know, I think especially as anthropologists, these are cultural forms we need to understand, and we need to understand the political economy as well as the creativity, and the problematics of that as well. So actually in my talk last night, I was trying to just run through some examples, and there's a very funny cartoon that popular Australian cartoonist for the newspaper had made a few years ago, where he's like talking to some Aboriginal folks who are sitting out in the desert and saying, you know, are you upset that people have taken images of Uluru and put it on Second Life, you know, and violated, you know, the kind of your custodial concerns for sacred aspects of that location? And they're like, no, we're upset that we have so much trouble getting onto the internet. So, you know, because the issues of you know, access in remote locations is a serious one as well. It's actually, I think, much better now in Australia than it was at the time of that cartoon. But it's, you know, it's just a kind of an important reminder that that a lot of people actually want to have that connectivity, and the question of access is a really important one. So. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And I wonder what being in this, you know, global economy, what sometimes people like to call neoliberalism, although that mm-hmm. term's come a little bit out of fashion, what it does to the sort of the different media that Indigenous groups create. You know, does it kill difference? Does it, you know, celebrate it, commodify it? Like, what happens to this Indigenous medium in circulation?
Yeah. Again, I feel like I whatever I know is just a fraction of what's going on out there. Mm-hmm. And I hate to generalize even within a particular world. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so I'd rather speak from examples
course,
and point to
course.
Those. You know, so... for example, there's a wonderful project in Northern Australia in what's called Arnhem Land, a Yolngu-speaking community where an anthropologist, Jennifer Deeker, has worked for many, many years and has wonderful collaborative projects going on. And they have been at the forefront of creating really amazing phone-made media. And a lot of the media is actually based on, some of it's just like, having a lot of fun with the capacity to do that and, you know, play with special effects and so forth. But there's quite a lot of use of special effects using totemic totemic animals, basically, for their world. So you'll have like wonderful, just kind of zany, but wonderful images made that are part of these phone-made media projects where they have like a, you know, kids' faces appearing in the mouth of an open shark. Or, you know, anyway, just like lively, very lively, you know, very distinctive, very, you know, since culturally local projects. And those have circulated in interesting ways. So they've been very enterprising about developing projects and shows that have now made the circuit in museums. So we invited a show they did a number of years ago, about 4 years ago, called Gapuyek, Calling Gapuyek, the name of their community. And it's about how they've been using their mobile phones and creating these little phone-made media projects. So we mounted an installation during the Margaret Mead Film Festival at the American Museum of Natural History, and had like little booths where people could sit and watch these little films. And it was set up almost like a little camp area, as it would be in their community, with like we used some AstroTurf and projected images of the kind of environment there on the walls. A lot of people just loved it. It was so popular, and we had a wonderful crew from the community there interacting with people. They're wonderful ambassadors as well, and they just loved talking to the incredible range of people who come through a place like the Museum of Natural History in New York, which is very diverse. And people felt it's so interesting also because people very, you know, identified with them as people of color, of course. And so the kinds of conversations that went on that were produced by the opportunity to see these very charming films, but then to also just engage face-to-face and talk about what their worlds were like was really quite wonderful. And then they produced a film about ringtones. And so it's a short film I recommend called Ringtone. And it's just a series of wonderful interviews of people sort of face on, just talking about how they've chosen a particular ringtone for their mobile phone.
For our very last question, we asked this to all of our guests. So this project is part of a wider project on digital dignity. And so reflecting on your own work with Indigenous communities creating media, and also maybe with a digital age in mind, what do you think digital dignity can and maybe should mean?
I love that phrase, digital dignity, and I'm really excited to learn more about how you're using it. And I think it's a fabulous way to try and figure out, you know, how can we go forward with this in an age when like so much negative stuff happens with interfacing with the digital and, you know, on many possible platforms. So I'm very intrigued by that term. And the idea of in any way enhancing the dignity of anyone on Earth in a very undignified time seems like a really fantastic thing to do. But let me just sort of run back to the Gapuyek project, because I feel like that's a wonderful, I mean, when you encounter, you know, when I saw people encountering it in New York who know nothing about Northern Australia, very little about Indigenous Australian culture, and they were, so they were very impressed with the people who were there, in a sense, as ambassadors for their whole community, but they were also just so impressed with their creativity and the way they had taken up things that are familiar to them. I think one of the things about people who work with, like, who do interesting indigenized projects of phone-made media is it's very, or like a film about ringtones. Everybody has ringtones. Like, you could get a group of 10-year-olds sitting in front of that half-hour film and getting it, like, oh, yeah, people are using this media in their own way, and they have really different songs that they use, and they, you know, and the grandparents are anxious about it. I mean, these were things that had a kind of universal appeal without papering over profound difference of an important sort that, you know, I guess created a sense of engaged, respectful admiration and curiosity, which is, of course, what we always try and do as anthropologists. So to me, I thought that actually was a great example of something like that, of what I guess I would think of as digital dignity. And I think, don't know, you know, there's sort of like, here's this lovely example over here, and where I think it's probably replicated in a lot of places at the same time as, you know, many of, you know, so I, you know, so many people I know got off Facebook this year after Mark Zuckerberg was, you know, after we learned what Mark Zuckerberg was doing on Facebook. And and interestingly, so many, many people I know in the anthropology community said, oh, I really want to get off Facebook, but I can't because it's because I'm in touch with, you know, my people living in, like, you know, New Caledonia or whatever. I mean, it's astonishing how much connectivity is available, and also, you know, the importance of sustaining relationships that, you know, historically, for many people who have these strong connections to communities across the globe, aren't able to sustain in the same way. So that's a, that is a great thing. But at the same time, we're all struggling with how to maintain some idea of civility and respect in, you know, profoundly different media world than most of us grew up in. You know, I don't know. I'd love to hear more from your, you know, from you or anybody from the group about how you're conceiving of that project, because it seems like a wonderful thing to support.
Watch this space, or listen to this space, rather. Listen to this sound. Thank you so much, Faye, for joining us on Online Pods.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been, I appreciate being part of this divinity.
What I really enjoyed about Faye's interview was not only the nuance that she gave with her critical insights, but also how this led her to highlight the really rich and, I would say, positive examples. I think it's in, I think it's very easy to be critical and negative. Much more difficult to be critical and positive. I think this is something we can learn from this, and it links very well, I think, to our second guest, who really sort of thrives in this vein of positivity. So he's the admin for an Instagram account called Mangalore Meri Jaan, Mangalore My Life. And it's an account about this small southwestern Indian city. It's one of a number of Instagram pages about Mangalore and its surroundings. And some of these other pages focus on jokes, some of them quite brutal and at the expense of other people. But meanwhile, this page is relentlessly positive. It's a love letter to the city's best aspect. It highlights local cultures, shows how Muslims, Christians, Hindus are getting along. And because the city has a reputation for communal conflict, it's really quite a I would say, political act to be so so positive in the face of tensions that really do exist amongst these different communities. So, for instance, right now there's floods going on in Mangalore, and he's posting memes of Muslim men helping bail water out of a Hindu temple in their neighbourhood. So I met Wasin in Mangalore last month. We met in the early evening. We sat by a bench of the Gurupa River, close to a part of town called Sultan's Battery. So you can hear the bustle of city life softly playing away in the background. Let's hear what he has to say. And it gives me great pleasure to welcome Wasim Shan from Mangalore Meri Jaan to Online Gods. Let's start with my first question. It's like, why do you start like an Instagram page like Mangalore Meri Jaan?
A good question. Basically, like my intention is to help Mangalore. Help Mangalore in sense all the means. So we have many Mangaloreans not in Mangalore. They have been settled down in USA, UK, Dubai, Gulf countries, all over the world. So who are the Mangaloreans? They miss Mangalore a lot. So this is the best way to put forward what's happening in Mangalore. What's the news? What's the top news? How the Mangalore is? What's going on in Mangalore in spite of they being in the Dubai? So I got lots of inbox saying that, you admin, you're doing really good job, because in spite of I'm being in Mangalore, in the Gulf countries, I'm in the USA, UK, I don't really miss Mangalore. That's a first point. And second point is like, what's happening in Mangalore? It should be like represented by something. So what my other post says is like, if someone has done really excelled, so most of the people represent Mangalore, India, and do they really good, and somewhere they need to be like appreciated something. So I take that platform to appreciate them. They feel really happy. Yeah, okay, someone has recognized me. In spite, say, though I have represented India, it may come in as national studio or national news, but not in the local community people. And most of the local people, they don't may they miss out seeing that when they come in the local page, like a small page, and we appreciate them, they feel really happy. So that's the second thing. And the third point is keeping the culture, roots of Mangalore, by putting up the same. See, this is what we've been following. Let's not forget it. So let's take forward along with the what's happening, like how the generation is right now. So most of, see, when we say about culture, Mangalore's most famous, I can say, pili dance. Pili dance is one of the first thing, and people love it like crazily. So no matter which religion, which caste, which creed, so they love pili dance. So when it comes to religion, everything has been highlighted there. When it comes to religion, so when it comes to any festival, so for example, it may be Eid for Muslim, it may be Christmas for Christian, or maybe Diwali for Hindus. So I put them wishes, what's happening. So what is the main root of that Diwali festival? So most of the stuff, so everything should be highlighted. Not only when we talk about media, they put all politics, that I avoid politics in my page. That's the main topic.
Okay, there's lots of things you mentioned. Just for people at home who aren't familiar with Mangalore, pili dance is tiger dance.
Exactly.
Where people dress, are painted actually as tigers, and then dance at various functions and festivals around the city. But so let's stick on the city for 1 minute. So you have a city pride, shall we say? How does this distinguish you from other? There's lots of pages about Mangalore, right? Lots of Instagram accounts. So does this distinguish you from others? If that's your thing, city pride. Some of the other pages do something different?
Yeah, so my page, what I do, I avoid trolls. I don't want to put down someone there. So what someone has really done good, I'll put there. If not, I'll just avoid that post. Mm-hmm. So something like no, there are many other pages doing really good. So they have their own domain. So maybe they are troll pages, some maybe meme pages, and some maybe just news, and some maybe just put up the photography thing of Mangalore. So Mangalore Maze is something I took for gathered everything. So maybe the appreciating someone, putting up the what's happening in Mangalore, something new coming in, new news, or that's what, and food, culture, cuisine, roots of, it's basically whatever that's there in, it's just have to be put forward.
I'm glad you mentioned cuisine. You wanted actually to meet in an ice cream parlor, which is super famous in Mangalore. Ideal Ice Cream was a small little Mangalore chain, and you have a lot of posts about ice cream actually. You mentioned that you didn't want to do politics. I wondered if I see a lot of your posts, they promote communal harmony, we can say. So isn't that in a sense to promote intercommunal agreement and harmony? Isn't that a type of politics in itself?
No. I just want to I don't want people to argue or fight on this communalism. That's what's happening. But it's not everybody. It's maybe a small 1% or 2% of people who have been carry forward with few tough stuff, but not everybody. So let's not carry forward with the small news what's happening. Let's put something good which will get unite everybody. So communalism is thing. That's the big thing which should avoid. Which should be avoided in the avoided in a society. So what I do is I put such posts that people will not feel, they don't get it in the when we one people comment are wrong, so another people will be offended. So that's where it starts. So let's not give them opportunity to start any point. So let's keep it something harmony. There are many occasions where Hindus help Muslim, Muslims help Hindu, Hindu help a Christian, Christian help a Muslim. So what of the smallest news if I get, I'll highlight there. So people will think something nice happening in Mangalore. That's what.
that's really interesting, because I'm guessing for a lot of people who make these Instagram pages, the amount of likes you get is really important, right? And it must be relatively easy to get likes by putting down other people, right? By making fun of somebody else for their religion or their different practices or etc. and so on. So do you ever see some other pages, they make some funny joke about somebody and they get thousands of likes, and you're maybe making a more honest or earnest point and you get less likes? How does that make you feel?
No, it doesn't matter for me. I just want a quality post. So that's what my aim, and I want to keep my page it's avoid from everything. It should be people shouldn't say Mangvi Medichan, he puts some bullshit. So people doesn't like. So as of till now, mashallah, I can say, probably I can say I have been experienced since 2011. I started Facebook. From Facebook, I had around 2 lakh followers. From Facebook, unfortunately, I lost the page 1 year back due to some corporate issues. Then I moved on to Instagram because now Instagram is moving. It's like boosting or like anything. In a year, I got around 20,000 likes. And as of my experience, nobody has told me anything like, admin, you are doing really wrong with this job. You are doing really fantastic job. Keep this page clean, neat, and away from communalism and politics. That's what I've been following it. So people do really like when the like when we avoid politics, communalisms, people will really like that. So I don't mind. I get lesser likes. I don't give a damn. It's like, it's okay, fine. If I post, let me post something quality post. That's what I mean.
And so talk me through, like, when you make your posts, like, where do you get your inspiration from? Where do you get these ideas from? Are you looking at other Instagram accounts and how they're doing stuff, or like what's the creative process?
That's really a tough question, problem is, like, I have been daily routine. When I wake up in the morning, what should I post today? So then I'll run my mind, so what should I post. I have a big number of photos and stuffs in my PC, in my mobile. I have lots of photos, so out of which I'll think, so let me post, maybe repost also. It doesn't matter, repost, but I'll put it in a different way. So every day I go through the post. Probably I get sometimes inspired from some other pages. Probably there are many pages in Mangalore, I get inspired, but I avoid copying the post from other posts and putting in my page. It doesn't make any sense. So what I'll do, I'll try my best to put on my, if not, no, let's not post it. If I'm putting something, let me post. It's maybe a simple of simple. And there are many people sending me the photos. If photo is really worth posting, I'll post and give them a credit, so they will be really happy. At least in that way I can make them happy. That's a point. It's, if not, don't just copy from others. Then when I'm doing meme, I can say meme, not troll. I don't troll anybody. Meme is something like, for example, I say Mangalore marriages are incomplete without the pili dance. So at end of the marriage or any function, so there must be a pili dance, I can say. So people love doing that. It's kind of meme, or it's like indirectly saying, yes, we do that. It's in that way, I have to think sometime. So what is something like which I can make a meme, which people will like it. It's not a trolling somebody. It's something like highlighting our culture in that way it is.
And one of the things that I noticed, one is like city pride that we talked about. Another is you highlight when like somebody from one community or another community, how they interact. And maybe a third thing I see a lot is nostalgia. Like you post like about school days or about old things and so on. So before we met, we didn't speak. We were just talking on Instagram chat. And I was trying to work out how old you were, because you were posting about school days and college days. And I was actually quite surprised when I meet you, because you look quite young. And so what's the idea behind nostalgia with your posts?
Honestly, like I'm 30 years old, 31 years old.
Really?
Yes. So I'm married and I have a small child of 20 days.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But it's like, honestly talking, I have not been to any colleges. No, I have not done any engineering. But I know how the pace of life in college, so which I have taken in other way. I'm not going to college, not going to, like, I have stopped my schooling in the SSLC. It's like 10th class. I mean, I'm not educated as what you think, but what I have done so far, it's of learning stuff. I go through internet a lot. That's crazy about me. That's what helped me in putting up the posts and other stuff. And nostalgia, yes, the people will like that. Something like people have forgotten when I put that. People will really like it. So I will think, what's that, something is missing nowadays, let's put that. Oh wow, people really, and make when even the food items which we miss nowadays, there are many food items.
Actually, I think maybe I first came across your page when I saw somebody reposting, somebody I knew, probably to do with food, like goli bhaji or something like this. Goli bhaji, for people who don't know, is like this special Mangalore deep fried ball with bits of coconut in, which is really good, with coconut chutney. But so I was thinking, so you're 31, so obviously you probably have a job and you have a kid, and so how much time does it take you to do this Mangalore Mary Jane?
Hardly, really. I really have a hard time nowadays because I'm into so many things. Like, I do even organize events, So when I'm married, I need to spend a time with my wife. I hardly go out. So my wife really supports me. Even she, at times she gets offended. Every time we'll be in the mobile. What you're doing? She knows that I'm getting something out of it. I'll help someone. She's really happy about it. And today when I say someone is interviewing me, okay, go. It's okay. It's not a problem. Family is not a problem for me because I manage them. I give them a time because I don't go out much because I sit at home, do something. And other stuff is like from some hotels, people like, this is my hotel cuisine. Please do post it. So at times I get paid for that. At times most of the time I don't get paid because I do charge only if something like people get benefits out of it. If not, no, it's okay, fine, I'll post it for free for you, don't worry, I don't want it to be charged for you. That way it is like when I talk about monetization, it's like quite not that happening great people, because people think it's just a one post where you have to be charged. It's okay, fine, if you you're really happy with my work, you can pay me out. I don't charge like give me so much or, no, like no, I don't have any threshold something, because I'm not really into like I want something from out of it or something.
It's interesting you mentioned then monetization. So maybe you can talk me right through this process. I mean, like, so people approach you and say, oh yeah, we want to post, or you go out and search for stuff? Or?
No, I really don't go around and ask for it, because honestly, I don't have so much time, because I have been like, I have to see, as a manager, right now I'm working for an IT company as a manager. So I have lots of responsibility. So I have to be, when I'm in office, I avoid Mangalore Mirijan. 9 hours of time I have to be with my it's like something like when I'm working something, I have to give my dedication over there as well. Not like I can take advantage being a manager, no, not at all. I have to be there, I'm doing my job. So that's the thing. And monetization, no, who people say that I would like to post it on you, how much do you charge? Okay, if I'll have some, depending on what they want to post. It's not that I have a limit. No, for purpose so much, no, nothing. Depending on what they're doing. For example, if it's really high people, like high, for example, if I say a branded company they want to do, so we have certain charge, let them pay in that way. If it is very small, I don't have to charge so much. I may post it for free. So it's not, monetization is not happening in that great way. It's like once in a while in that way it is.
So I just have two more questions for you. So one is about like this online, offline world. So this question has two parts. Partly like, you know, you said you're a manager in an IT company, and I wonder, do people know, you know, your other life, your online life? And if so, like, what, you know, how does this interaction work? And the second part of the question is like, do you know the other Instagrammers like who were posting about Mangalore? Like, I checked for you, like, and then like Kudla Trolls, or you know, all these people. Do you know them personally, and do you speak to each other?
Yes, I do know them personally, because when I started, what have been listening, like we have a group of we have a WhatsApp group where we have all the admins, so we talk about what's happening in Mangalore, and we know them each other, and we have been like united, so every page is united each other, so they don't have like you are doing good by your post, no, nothing like, they have been united, you post your page, you do good, so everybody's like, you post, grow your group, let's grow together. In that way, it's not like one person will have enmity with another page person. It's no, nothing like that such.
And what about, I did the bad thing that you learned not to do as an interview. I asked you two questions in one, but what about the first part of the question? Do people like in your workplace, do they know you like as the guy who does Mangalore Mirijan, or it's a secret?
Yes. So lots of people know, even my manager know about it, and few are like, yeah, he does a lot of people know about. I don't go and tell, no, I'm a man, I'm an admin, so it's like, no, nothing like that. If they come to know about me, yes, I do manage that, and I'm working in that company since 12 years. So of course they know about my in and out and what I do, but that's what, they don't question me. Still now they have not questioned me, no Vasim, you're not doing job, because that's what I said in the beginning. So I don't get Mangalore Mirijan into my work culture there, because I want to keep it away. So if I'm doing it, it's like out of my office work, office time. If in case if it's very urgent, something like even when I say about very urgent, so there are people who, if very urgent they need blood. Even that type post, so are very urgent. Blood is something like which is very urgent. If something, someone is really emergency, they need a blood, a certain group. So even I do post that. So if I get something urgent, I do post out of from office. I post that in that way.
Okay, so then my final question is a bit abstract. So like, So one of the things that we're looking at in this bigger research project that this podcast is part of is how debate about society and religion and politics, etc., and so on, is changing as more and more discussion takes place online. So I'm wondering, like, keeping in mind like the Instagram world of Mangalore and so on, do you think this is a what does the doing debate online, what does that do to the quality of the debate, do you think?
Yeah, so what I can say, it's like there is advantage and disadvantage as well. So advantage is like, so people like a few pages like us, and we keep up how many, and that really spreads. And disadvantage is like people take it in the wrong way. It depends on one people to people, I can say. So how they take it, so they have to take it in a communal way, they'll post it in that way, comment. If they take it in the right way, so it depends on people to people. But although then I can say the technology is going in the wrong direction at times, I feel so, because of online media, social media, the people are getting like turned around to the communalism. But another part as well, people are not giving a damn. It's like all about the fake news, I can say. They say they just not go carry forward with what's happening in online. Let's live the life easier by the friend circle what we have. Let's not go to like carry forward with all the stuff that's happening. That's all.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your answer to this question, all the others. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much, and I hope you guys had a great day. And thank you so much. I forgot your name.
Ian.
Okay. Thank you so much, Ian, and selecting Mangalore Jaan as one of the podcast for your like country or for your city. So I was really like when I got your inbox, I was like, it's really happening. I'm not sure, because I get lots of inbox which I don't even read, because if I read, they feel this admin is not replying me. So I replied to, because I can't keep everybody like posted there. So I just select someone whom I can reply. So when I saw your message, so it was something interesting, I said, okay, let's reply. And I said, okay, fine, let me give an interview. It's something like for the some podcast. Okay, thank you so much, Ian. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot. I found this interview really sweet, maybe even as sweet as the ice cream that we went to eat afterwards. And I don't mean sweet in a pejorative or condescending sense. It's almost a radical sweetness, because the page is so doggedly positive. Almost as if Waseem sees running the page as a civic duty. Anyway, that's it from us for this month. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast. As ever, you can get in touch via email, onlinegodspodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter and Facebook, and also the website, which is fordigitaldignity.com. If you have a few moments, give us some nice reviews in iTunes. Thanks again for listening. Thank you so much for listening to the Online Gods podcast. Online Gods is part of the project Online RPOL, funded by the European Research Council, starting grant agreement number 714285. The project's PI is Sahan Udapa, who's Professor of Media Anthropology at the Department of Social and Cultural Anthropology, Ludwig Maximilian University, Munich, Germany. This podcast, like all the podcasts, is brought to you in collaboration with the HOW Network for Ethnographic Theory. My personal favourite network for ethnographic theory. I've been your host, Ian Cook. Goodbye.